What's up, y'all? Welcome to Conversation Piece with Patrick Armstrong. I am the titular Patrick, and this is a show where we talk about the missing pieces of the conversations we're already having. Shout out to our returning listeners, and a high five and hello to everybody joining us for the very first time. I appreciate y'all being here in 2024, the year of the nap. My guest today is the founder of The Era, an organization that provides consulting for equitable artist representation. She is dedicated to empower artists and creatives, enabling them to find their authentic voices within the spaces they envision for themselves, rather than solely conforming to traditional work environments. With experience in marketing, social media, public affairs, and communications, she excels at crafting compelling messages and establishing consistent brand narratives. She also owned her own dog training business while out in LA. It is my honor and privilege to welcome Ella Ashwill to the show. Ella, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Patrick. I'm excited to be here.
I am excited to have you here. For folks who don't know who you are based on that little intro I just gave you, do you mind sharing just a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So born and raised in Indiana, moved in 2009 out to Los Angeles. I did AmeriCorps for 2 years, so served community engagement, which I'm sure we'll dive more into. It's a big part of my life. From there, I didn't really feel like I was done with LA or it was done with me. Mm. So I found myself there for another 10 years. had the dog training business. That was incredible. Learned a lot. Behind the scenes, I worked for a lot of, I hate saying high profile people, but a lot of NDAs signed to be in homes, things like that. And a fly on the wall and those experiences opened me up a lot to the logistics of the business, behind the scenes work, contracts, things like that. Moved back here in 2020 and was kind of a fly on the wall for the first few years of learning, having these conversations, immersing myself in the community, and started my business last year, and it got off the ground in the last 6 months. So in that time, it's been moving and grooving. I'm representing currently 8 different artists and creatives in indie, and the list is evolving, and I'm excited to be here. Yeah, it's a good thing. It's fun. I feel like I have a lot of things that make me, but when it comes to these conversations that you're having with people, that's been a huge thread of me in the last few years. So it's super important.
Well, I'm super excited to have you here and to dive into some of these conversations that you've been having. Where in Indiana did you grow up?
Crawfordsville,
okay.
Which is why I think, you know, I had to do the rightful passage of a little creeping on your Instagram when we started following each other.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, so who, my friend Becca follows you. And I was like, and you have, her maiden name was Armstrong. And so I was like, wait, are they cousins? How? And then she lives in Oregon, right?
Yes.
So I wrote Becca and I'm like, yo, how do you know Patrick?
What?
And she's like, right, this is crazy. This is how the world is interconnected. Yeah. And she's like, wait, why do you know Patrick? And I was like, I'm going on this podcast. She's like, wife is my girl. That's my girl. Like, I love them fiercely. You know, Becca's such strong energy.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, she's a people mover too. She's doing all kinds of things. And I told her I was going to be on the show with you. And she was like, I'm stoked for this conversation. Like, y'all have great energy together. Right?
Wow.
I just rocked your world.
Yeah, you really did rock my world. Shout out to Becca Bykowski, Becca Armstrong. Yeah, one of my wife's good friends. Had some good times with her. That's now I don't even know where to go with this conversation.
Well, that's what I mean.
My brain is broken.
It's so beautiful that we're here going to have these cool conversations about things going on in indie, yet I think it used to be 6 degrees of separation, and now they say it's 3 degrees.
That makes sense.
Everything is so interconnected, and when you pay attention to those signs in the universe, it aligns even like more organically than you planned.
Yeah.
And it's just beautiful. I love it.
It is beautiful. It really is beautiful. It's wild to me to think how those things happen, and like, the metaphor of the small world, I always used to be like, well, the world is very, very large. But really, when you build community, like, the world shrinks.
Mm.
And it is wild. Okay, Crawfordsville. were you always in Crawfordsville? Did you go to college somewhere else?
So got out of Crawfordsville the minute I could.
Okay.
18 years old, I drove my car to California.
Okay, that was 2009.
I had applied to colleges. My family and background, it was going to fall fully on me. And I'd had a few scholarship things, but it wasn't enough for me to feel like I could trust going into a 4-year university right away.
Sure.
And I knew I wanted to do something post high school, but I just couldn't figure out what. the family I was living with, my high school years took me on a trip to California and I was like, I love it here. And then I started learning. I worked at the Boys and Girls Club for 4.5 years from like basically eighth grade till I graduated. And I found out about AmeriCorps through them. And I was like, that's a great way to get out of here. They're going to give me more money to go to school.
Right.
So I did that for a few years. I worked through City Year. It's under the umbrella of AmeriCorps, but works with, I wouldn't want to say at-risk youth, but some of the kids that need a more focus group in each grade. So I followed, and I was 18, and that was a whole other past life story we can't even get into probably, but like 18 years old in LA, working in like Watts, Compton, Pico Union, I followed 12 eighth graders to all their core subjects and would do one-on-one focus. It was beautiful, but to build trust in an environment where I was the minority, where these kids were like, who in the hell is this white woman who's like basically our age coming in and she's going to tutor us? And like, I definitely had to earn respect, but I got to watch some of those kids because I was in LA so long. I got to watch them graduate high school. And that was so, that impact on those deeper levels is just like, you can build community wherever you are.
Right.
And it's a matter of how you immerse yourself in those experiences.
Yeah.
So it was challenging. I think there were a few times where I'm sure my manager and team leader thought I was ready to just leave because it was a lot of challenging work. But once I gained their trust, it was beautiful work.
Yeah, I can only imagine how overwhelming that would be. My wife is a middle school, or has been a middle school teacher here in Indianapolis, and worked at Wayne Township, has now been working in Washington Township. And just even in like socioeconomic ranges, ethnicity, race, like all different kinds of kids come through her classroom. And it's just to hear her come home and talk about those experiences, I can only imagine being out in LA and having to do something similar, you know, and then being able to sit down one-on-one and have that conversation and then watching them grow. Like, in those times where it was like, okay, this feels overwhelming, what kept you in that spot until you were ready to leave?
Purpose. Like, I think seeing the bigger picture past like maybe a mood outburst or the discouragement in the moment that they often, the kids that I personally work with, I could see from their lived experience, they didn't have a lot of people stick through and be consistent with them.
Sure.
And I didn't want to just be another statistic in their life that just was in and out.
Yeah.
And technically when you get done serving your core year, you don't have to keep those relationships. Like, it's probably more encouraged not to talk to those kids, but I did so through their schools, like West Adams High School, built relationships to where I could go to events and it was all school focused. And I wasn't like, I'm going to get like hot pot with them.
Right.
I'm just like having ongoing conversations, checking in on them. I mean, a few of them now as adults follow me on Facebook and have kids and wives, and it's beautiful, you know, and that what they've said to me over the years of just that year of time of having someone, no teacher they ever felt was as consistent. A lot of those teachers are passionate, but you're in a school, it's not, it's 4,000 kids in a middle school, you know,
right.
And they see so many, they're passionate about what they're doing, but they're also having to stick to the No Child Left Behind, all of the pressures put on them. So often kids are getting passed on without actually meeting their metrics.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to be a part of the solution, you know?
It's wild to think that at 18, you already had this realization. Like, that was something that was important, not just to you, but would then be important for them going forward.
Yeah, and that's why I was so adamant about earning their trust, and not in a forced way, but on their terms. And, you know, my name's Ella, but that in Latin, that's Ella. So Spanish, it's Ella. So they always, man, Miss Ella, give me back my talkies, you know, it's always like... And I built trust with them around teaching them how to trust themselves too and their responsibilities. And that was, it was really beautiful. And that I grew up quick before I even turned 18 through just some life experiences in my childhood. And I think being able to show them that I wasn't just some like pompous white bitch that was
invading your space.
No, like, I wanted to learn from them. And that's the same energy now later in my life in Indy, where before I wanted to represent artists and just come in and provide solutions. I wanted to learn about the problems. I wanted to have these conversations before I just came in and was like, you should do this.
Yeah.
You should do this.
Well, that's something we talk about a lot, or I've been able to talk about a lot with people recently, and something that I took away from the conversations that were happening at Butter last year was a lot of people, organizations specifically, they build something new without going in the community and asking, what do you need? And then when they have this thing and the community member's like, well, this isn't what we need, they're like, well, too bad. And then they go somewhere else, or that it shutters.
Or they hear it and it almost falls on ears that don't do anything with that feedback. Constructive feedback can lead to a lot of growth.
100%.
And that's where I think a lot of my frustration and the work that I want to see change in the city stems from.
Okay, we're going to get into that. First off, after your year in the core doing this work, what came next? Like, you're
oh my gosh, what didn't come next? I was living in MacArthur Park. I'm 18 years old, you know, in a flat, like just a already crazy experience. And I moved up to the West Side, got a place with a friend out there, a mutual friend. We were roommates for 3 years. In that time, I was a nanny. I did executive assistant work. I did individual contract work for a boutique agency called Luma Pictures. They do like visual effects for the Coen brothers, things like that. So I helped plan their Halloween party. Just cool little assistant. I did a lot of gigs, I would say. I was in because I couldn't narrow down what was going to keep me there, but I wanted to experience what could.
Sure.
So got into that. And then I took a part-time dog job with this really intense South African woman, beautiful, but just eclectic energy. And she had like 45 dogs a day. And
damn.
She, yeah, it was absurd. Like picture like the Dumb and Dumber truck, like loaded up, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just like, you need extra hands. And she was like, I'll bring you on part-time gig, whatever. So I'd help her. And she would only book and do boarding in her home. And I was seeing a lot of clients just wanted that one-on-one, like cater to my needs experience.
Sure.
Or they thought they were too famous to be seen at the dog park or at the vet or whatever. So I was like, let me kind of add on to these services. So I asked her, like, can I take on the clients that you reject for overnights and see what comes of this? And then I got into the science of dogs. And I was like, I can't just, like, kick it with these dogs and walk them without wanting to know their brain.
Sure.
And then I got into training. So I owned that. My business was called Friends of Jack. My dog's name was Jack. Shout out to Jack. He was an OG. He was a legend, man. Did that for, it was about 8.5 years. And in that unfolded to, because I was in the homes and in the studios and spaces of a lot of known people, I became more of an executive assistant to a lot of these homes. I was paying their bills, their groceries, setting up their podcast shoots behind the scenes. And it was an estate assistant in a lot of ways. It was running everything at the estate and their lives, you know, like their lives down to it. Like I knew their liquor orders down, knew what they wanted for breakfast and they were taken care of. And I enjoy that. Like I enjoy taking care of people. I've learned the boundaries around that and people pleasing.
Sure. Can you define?
I feel like people pleasing comes from a place of your own unhealed
love that
needs.
Yeah.
And to help people because you want to comes from a place of intention, and you're doing this for the benefit of them and yourself in a good, rounded way. It's not to just make them like you or, you know, you're not just trying to serve them like to de-escalate or be passive aggressive. Like there's so many layers to what people pleasing can be, but it's been a lot of work around that, just reframing the brain and boundaries.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a lot of the gig work that you were doing before of like, what could keep me out here? What do I want to do? Then served all of this work that you did in addition to the dog training. And I saw that you wrote about how the work that you were doing during this time helped you to hone your ability to tailor your role to each client's unique experience. I was wondering what specifically from that time, that experience, dog training, but also doing the estate work, the estate assisting, translates to the work that you do now.
It's so relatable. It's all, again, it's interconnected. So I'm representing artists and managing them in different capacities, indie, around the Midwest and beyond. And no two artists' needs are the same. You could have a visual artist and another visual artist, and the way they see their lens or where they see their work going looks completely different. Mm-hmm. Same with a creative, maybe a musician. For instance, Fred, who I manage, he's not just a musician. He has years in the background in corporate marketing, but he also is an installation artist, and he has a plethora of things. So how can I cater to his needs and meet them effectively while also having someone else who may do install work, like thanks Theodore, who I'm doing Made by Theodore. Theodore's a great guy. He's getting more into installation art, but he also does visual work. And so not, their needs aren't even close to being the same. So similar to what I was doing with the, in LA, I'm just catering to the needs of the artist here, when that boils down to contract management, counter-offering on a contract, layers of the logistical stuff that typically artists, when they just want to create, don't really give a shit about branding themselves.
Sure.
Or they know they need to, but they don't know where to start.
Yeah.
And I just want to be able to provide that support. And when it sounds so wrong to say, like, oh, I cater to your needs, because it sounds just, but it is. It's specific to everyone. So, sure.
Well, like you said, it's you came to learn about the difference between boundaries and people pleasing.
Right.
And it's navigating that line. And I love your definition of people pleasing about this, the unhealed parts of you. Mm-hmm. As you were figuring out the difference between that, what parts of yourself, if you don't mind sharing, did you feel like you were healing at that time?
Oh my gosh. The inner child work is an ongoing process, oh, isn't yeah. it?
I'm adopted, so I've been doing that shit for like three years. Yeah, it's been a whole thing.
It's peeling back an onion. Like, just when you think you've made progress, you're like, oh, I still have work to do.
Well, it's like, I like to talk about it as like, okay, I climbed this mountain, and it's like, yes, I feel like I've made it to the peak. And then I look over and it's like, oh, there's another mountain to climb.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's life. Like, I mean, sure. Everyone says lately, everybody, life be lifing, you know, and it is like,
that's true.
Life be lifing, but it is, I don't want to say, and that was part of my central nervous system. I've worked really hard to heal, because I lived so long in fight or flight mode, mm-hmm. and waiting for the next shoe to drop, that I expected experiences to go wrong before they could be good.
Sure.
And we deserve good things.
100%.
We're allowed to feel good things. And something can come up and it can feel scary, but that doesn't mean it's a bad thing.
Right.
So I had to lean into that. And I want to be able to do that for artists that I'm working with too. Like, I want them to be able to, it's not a bad feeling to be nervous. Same as anger. Anger isn't a bad feeling. It's a matter of how we choose to process it.
Exactly.
I want people to be able, all your feelings are valid. I want to be able to help assist with those so that people see you effectively. And it's so important to the core of me for people to feel seen in the spaces they want to be in, not just where they can find work.
Right. Yeah, that validation piece is so powerful, because not only do you spend years most likely being invalidated by other people, but because of that invalidation, you start to invalidate yourself.
Right.
And you don't allow yourself to feel mm-hmm. all of your feelings. And then when you are feeling them, this is what I've been talking about, the difference between, like, I was always emotional as a kid, but I wasn't really emotionally intelligent. Like, I would experience reactions and outbursts of emotion, but I wouldn't understand, like, oh, there's a different way to feel that, because I was never allowed to feel
the
it differently.
Space to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. To process it. And I think that when we find that place finally, like, you can really start to do the healing and, you know, and feel that. And just listening to you talk and having and share your story and having read a little bit about your journey, I feel like there's so much that I resonate with, even though ours has been very, very different. There's just a lot of pieces that really resonate and sit with me. Including you coming back to Indiana in the mid-2020s. We moved back, my wife and I, from Chicago right at the beginning of the pandemic. Like, for whatever reason, we just wanted more space. We were trapped in a one-bedroom, one-bathroom apartment.
Where were you at?
We were in Lakeshore, right off the lake on Addison.
Okay.
Right next. I'm a big Cubs fan, so we got really lucky to find an apartment right there within walking distance of Wrigley. But once the lake got locked down, we were like, we can't stay here. we need more space. We ended up finding a house to rent that was the same price, but was four bedrooms, had a fenced-in backyard, an attached garage. I was like, okay, we got to go. And so we came back, and that honestly kickstarted my journey into sitting down with you, like where I am at now. Mm-hmm. What brought you back to Indy at that time?
Our stories really are similar. It's crazy. it was 2020, right? So I had this dog business. Where I was before the pandemic took down, I had about 45 clients a week. I had two part-time employees.
Dang.
And I had a really dope studio apartment in Venice. It was a little bungalow. I'd gotten myself pretty established. I didn't even own a car. Rode my bike to work between all my clients lived like blocks from each other.
Right.
So I could just pick them up, go on a walk, do the thing. It was great. And often I was staying for like 2-3 weeks at a time at a client's home.
Sure.
So I'd rent out my own place, you know? But then when it started to go in lockdown, it was like, all right, so I don't think we need you to come in our house this week and walk the dog. Home care providers were the first to go. Nannies,
sure.
House cleaners, dog walkers, everyone that you needed every other day of your life, you suddenly realize, I got to do this on my own.
Yeah. Oh, so, I'm home now.
Yeah. So they were like, I think I can walk my dog today. I'm like, yeah, you're going to have to. So it's going
to. No, you need to walk your dog today.
Experience that. Get out of your home. We're going to be stuck, you know? So I was like, man, in my studio apartment in 2019 was 1900 a month.
Okay.
And so I was like, all right, everything seems to be putting on pause with my business. Do I like take some random job at Costco for a bit? What do I do out here? Do I live off my business savings out here, or do I sell most of my stuff, keep my tchotchkes, my bike, you know, my art, and go back to Indiana for a bit? My younger sister was moving back from Florida at the time. So I was like, that could be nice to be nearby.
Sure.
I hadn't got to be like an auntie in person. My older sister has two kids. They live in Germany, but like that's international travel to see them. So I was like, yeah, maybe I'll do the auntie thing, kind of hunker down with family, chill out. And then I got back here. I lived at 34th in high school and just found the place through some mutual friends that I knew from back in high school, actually from Wabash College, but found the place, rented it out. But didn't have a car over there and was like, what am I? This is not LA. Public transportation in the city. I quickly found out about our public transportation issues in this city, you know?
No choice
and
but
that's
to find
something
out.
Like, I love that Senator Hundley and Andre Carson, they're pushing so hard for public transit. And this, I see the potential. Like, I could see a rail system going over the city. I see it running through cities like you do Chicago. But I love this. The 65 interchange project going on right now. That's an exciting thing happening. But yeah, I was like, okay, public transit doesn't work. And I felt lonely. And I know the difference of being alone and not lonely, but I also, community is so important.
Yeah.
And the protest, George Floyd, COVID was going on, but the city had curfews. And it was like, you're either going to meet people through community organized demonstrations or you're not, like, you know, maybe me. I worked at, well, I don't know what I can or can't say. I worked at what I would call a scam in insurance life company. And I quickly got out of that, was working at Angie's List.
I worked at Angie's List. Okay.
Who hasn't worked at Angie's
True.
List?
If you live in Indy, you either applied there or you worked there.
It just seems like a weird rite of passage.
It really does.
And now I guess branded Angie. But yeah, went from there to Charles Schwab and became like in the financial broker world, which is LOL comedy for me. Because if you're close to me as a friend, you just know like I'm more into writing. Yes, I can work numbers, but I did not picture myself in the stock market.
Sure.
That was never in my cards.
Right.
You know? So I did that for some financial security. I joined the their employee resource group board. I was on the Pride board there. And I just started going to different events. I was going to protests downtown. I started going to things. I found out about Butter.
Mm.
Butter was one of the first things in this city that made me see Indy in the light that it's been in for so long but hasn't had the platform or the people to fully back it. And I was like, whoa, this is like an LA event. This is like being in Chicago. This has so much potential. And I was like all in. I was just like, couldn't believe it. Wanted to support all the artists of the 18, wanted to support, learn about more Black artists, learn about all kinds of artists in this city. And I just I had been going to First Fridays.
Okay.
So that was kind of a way to meet people. But then after making connections and faces at some of the protests and then going to Butter, started running around with made friends with the artist that we were just doing everything together all the time, going to things, and just started having conversation after conversation that made me realize how much beautiful shape-shifting is happening here and how pivotal it is. But also I think it's the roots of things like AmeriCorps. I can't just talk about things I see an issue with or could have solutions without being a part of the action.
Right.
And like, you can talk all day with somebody.
Yeah.
But people like to talk.
It's easy to ideate and it's easy to have a conversation. It's a much different thing to step under the street and do the action.
Yeah, and a lot of people aren't going to even take action from your words unless they see you doing that action.
Exactly. Without models, we don't know. We can talk about it all day.
I'm going to fail forward all the time. I'm going to have hiccups. I am a new business. I've been so passionate about helping others. I won't say I've been focused on the own marketing of my own business, but I know it's going to be key to this being consistent and staying as impactful as I want it to be.
Right.
You know, I have to also care about my own brand too.
100%, because you got to build sustainability. It's easy to always continue to fail forward and always taking these actions, which gets you in front of people.
Right.
Like, and people see this, what you want to do. Okay, I want to work with Ella now. And then it's like, oh shit, I've got too many things. I've got too many plates that I'm holding and juggling. Mm-hmm. And now I need to either step back, or for some people, it's like, I can't sustain this anymore.
Correct. And that's where I'm now in a place of navigating. So the artist that I'm currently representing and managing, I really want to be able to, everything I said I've done for them so far, I've delivered. And I want to be able to consistently do that. And so this first focus core year, I'd almost say an incubator year for this business, I really want to hone in on delivering those results for the people who've already on my roster.
Yep.
There's a few people I'm taking meetings with where I'm able to offer helping them with like a one-off thing.
Sure.
And eventually, of course, I would love to have more representation and management under who I like, the amount of people I'm doing, but I don't want to fill my plate too full. And I'd rather deliver really good results than half-assed results.
100%. You can't spread yourself too thin, or the people who you already have on your roster are gonna suffer. And then anybody new who you're trying to, you know, funnel in are gonna also suffer. They're not gonna receive the type of attention they need. And I think a lot of people don't realize once they taste success that that's not the end. Like, you are not just now successful. It's what do I have to do to continue to maintain, to be sustainable, but to also grow. Like, to also build upon the success, not just achieve the same level. It's like, how do we continue to lift up?
Right.
Yeah.
And you can have a hype year as an artist. You can be like really known for a year and have opportunities coming at you that feel like they're just being handed to you.
Yes.
But for that to remain consistent, you still have to be putting in work to form those connections and branding yourself, putting yourself out there in the right markets to where you still will be seen in the spaces you want to be in, you know?
Exactly.
Instead of getting bitter about opportunity and why is so-and-so getting this?
Yes.
Why is this happening? Often those people are going after things left and right. They get more no's than yeses.
100%.
And also some no's lead to bigger yeses.
Right. It's a no right now, but not a no forever.
Well, and I encourage that all the time. It's like, you put all this work in and you feel really defeated because you got a no from that institution. That doesn't mean that's not going to lead to a bigger yes with another partnership. And you might have just dodged a lot of red flags in that process.
Mm.
And so those no's that do lead to bigger yeses, people who talk with me, they've heard me say this before. I talk about that a lot because that opportunity doesn't mean you've missed all opportunities.
Right. Yeah. It's like, that's the thing. Like when these opportunities aren't visible or are known to us, we can feel like if we lose out one, we've lost out on them all.
Yeah. And that's just not the truth. And becoming bitter isn't going to serve you. Like,
no.
It's okay to feel anger. It's okay to be pissed off at how it is, but that's something that I'm trying to help the artists that I work with and represent, and ones I don't, that I'm just having these conversations with. That's where I want the accountability in themselves to ask of these organizations and institutions or centers. So say you have a arts contract with one of the centers in the city that can provide funding for that, and you thought it was a horrible experience and you just want to go live on Instagram about it, right? Because you're just pissed off. As a manager, I want to work with you to first, provide constructive feedback to that organization or institution. Right. Because if they don't know, they can't do better.
Exactly.
And I see myself as a bridge between these artists and these institutions. Mm. I don't want to be the Arts Council. I don't want to be the Indie Arts Center. I don't want to be Gang Gang. I couldn't be Gang Gang.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I love what they're doing, though. And I just want to help artists feel supported in the process of working with them.
Mm. Yes. So, okay. I love that you talked about, like, when you came back, you saw what was happening with Butter. You see this evolving landscape of culture and community and arts specifically happening in Indianapolis. You're like, I'm all in. That was going to be something I was going to ask you. Like, when did you know this was a space you wanted to operate in? You answered that question for me. what about what you do? Let me ask you this way. What do you think is a gap that you're still trying to fill right now for artists in the arts space here in Indianapolis that you either fill as Ella or you fill as the era, or you think is something that we need to be talking about or addressing right now that we're not?
That's very layered. I have a few things, but I'll try and just focus on, let's see. I think a gap that I am helping, I'm trying to actively be a part of the solution toward, is where artists feel there's some missed overlap or step between the artist's experience and the center's experience with the artist. Like, it's not, obviously it's different lenses, but when an artist takes the time to actually go and set up the meeting and give the constructive feedback on their experience, and there's nothing that comes out of that from the institution side, there's no update in their contracts, there's no, I think that's so discouraging for the artist, because they put themselves out there in a way that was already so vulnerable, and then they felt like it wasn't taken seriously, and there was no formidable action or steps taken. And a lot of the time, I think it's not just about they want to see that as the artist or creative for themselves, but for other creatives.
For other people, exactly.
So that the experiences become less and they become better, and we continue to foster these relationships effectively.
Mm-hmm.
This issue for me is, okay, let me give an example of just like something that I'm passionate about, like the bigger lens for the artist. So say you got $3,000 from one of these places to design a design for a big event in Indianapolis. And that's going to be used for that event. And at the moment, $3,000 might sound really good to design some little drawing, right?
Sure.
In those contracts, what I'm seeing as I work in the behind the scenes work, they're signing off their royalty fees. They're signing off their licensing agreements. Most of these artists don't even know what that means. Okay.
Yep.
For one, like, that's a whole thing. And then I see the bigger lens for the artist past just the moment of their success. So say in 30 years, that sports organization or something uses that design again for a postcard. And God forbid you're an artist that's homeless on a bench, but that happens in most big cities because they can't be, that's a common thing.
Yeah.
You're not going to see 30 cents per every postcard sold in royalties if they use it for an anniversary design.
Right.
I want to see those types of things added to contracts so that the bigger picture is sustainable past just for the year, but for their life.
Right. So that makes me think about something I've been trying to incorporate my own day to day, is this idea of like seven generations thinking. I think, I can't think of the anti-racist educator who, I'm going to link it in the show notes. You can find it in the show notes, but, just the idea that the decisions that we make don't affect us just tomorrow or even next year, but affect people way, way, way beyond what could be happening. And
right.
Just like you're talking about, that royalty setup couldn't just affect that person after they might be in a tough spot where it would really help them. But think about if they have kids or they have a family that they want to take care of and set up down the line. That's helping them.
Right.
And how that decision of just being more thorough or having received the education to be thorough with a contract where you might be signing away stuff that you don't realize can affect you down the line.
Right.
That decision really helps you to be set up for that future. Is that like, how do you approach that for yourself as this bridge in talking to the institution to make sure these changes happen?
I help organize. So when I started the era, before it became just contract representation, I thought I was going to be doing, because of my marketing background. At one point, I worked for a mentor in California who owned a solutions and development company, and she did contract work for like Credit Karma, things like that. So I was helping her build framework for those training programs and then doing her social media content. Shout out to Cindy. Cindy's an OG. She taught me a lot. But that experience and learning about all the little behind the scene details that can go into that, it was like, okay, I have to find a way to apply this into action for these people. What comes with that is I don't want to say this like I'm being rude. I don't care if you don't like me. Mm-hmm. I am here to say the truth and help say things and be a voice for these artists who have a voice, but they can't find the words to put it together.
Right.
Or they just need a little bit more support in their corner to go to these meetings and have someone. And more often than not, artists that I'm going to these meetings with are prepared. They'll have a pitch deck of feedback. They'll have their own thing. They'll give a little bit of their issues, but then to play like, I don't want to say good cop, bad cop, but to be able to let them say what they need. And I can then just be the voice of reason of like, this situation was not okay.
Right.
How this went down, it was poor oversight. I don't care to have those conversations. I actually care a lot about having those conversations.
Right.
I just don't care if you don't like me because I'm saying it.
Right.
I'm going to continue as a bridge to try and have impact and meaning behind what I say, because I don't like when words don't have action.
Yeah.
I said that about myself, and I want to hold these sinners that claim so much about caring for artist care. I want to hold them accountable to actually care about the artist care in a full picture. And I know they do. I know a lot of these places are deeply embedded in the work they do, and it's not hard, it's not easy work. Like, they're up against a lot of things too,
right.
But they have a lot more resources and networks to support these artists. And as that bridge, not only having the conversation, I just want to, like, I wrote one of the artists I work with today and was like, can I go ahead and follow up with them and ask them like why they, you know, like I kind of feel like they just kind of gave you a bunch of talk. And he was like, give it a couple more days. Like, cause you know, cause it was like, I'm like, okay, it's been 2 weeks.
Is there
something happening? Thank you.
Yeah. That's already
Thank
too
you.
Long.
Yeah. That's where I'm like, we move, we get stuff done.
Yeah.
So, it's not to be bitchy. It's not to be rude. It's that I am soft. Like, I am a soft person in a lot of ways, but in this work, you don't really get to be soft because
right.
you have to be able to represent and say the hard things that this artist needs you to say.
Well, because from an institutional perspective, it's easy to just push, like to hear from the artist, but not get the pushback, and to push the artist off and say, oh, we could, okay, thank you for your feedback, goodbye.
It's so dismissive.
And then, like you said, the things are not going to change. Like, you don't see any change. And then the artist not only wanted something better for themselves, but for the people who come after them to not have to suffer through the same kind of treatment 100%. Or whatever it is.
And so many of them, yes, they want consistent work and opportunities for themselves as the artist, but they're also wanting to create platforms for people in their communities they feel like don't have the light on them, don't have a spotlight, don't get tapped in.
Yeah.
I know Black artists in the city who come to me and say, I can't get tapped in with Gang Gang. What do I do?
Mm.
I don't have the answers to that. To me, I'm like, let's set up a meeting with them.
Right.
Or what would you like to do? If there's no action that they want to do with that, then that stays where it is. But I still have questions in that process of how I can better assist people.
Right.
And they don't just work with Black artists. That's the core of what they do. But even during Butter, I think that's a misunderstanding that people say, like, they outsourced work to Chromatic, to Purpose Projects, to Fred. Like, they deeply care about the work and the threads embedded in this community.
Right.
I believe that wholeheartedly, but I think a lot of people are bitter because they don't know or how to get tapped in, when it's more just having these important conversations.
Yeah. And being willing to sit down at the table to have the conversation and understand, like you said, like what Gang Gang's doing, it is elevating and highlighting Black voices within this community and beyond, because they haven't been centered. They haven't been given a voice. If anything, they've been actively torn down and
right.
removed from the city. But it's not just that. It's about how do we build a coalition so that way we can really truly have power. Because if we're only doing things from one community perspective, it only serves that single community.
Right.
Yes, it can serve as a model for other people, but if we can find ways to infuse it together, we can truly build the type of foundation that we need to actually create systemic change.
That part. It's huge.
Yeah.
And for these creatives that I'm working with and the ones I don't even know yet, I don't know what this looks like yet, but it's been something in the works. And I've had conversations with other art organizations and communities or galleries in the city. But I almost think it's going to take one big artist like action call out of like, I don't want to say we all have to sign like a document, but like the more people to hold these spaces accountable for the stuff they want to see, instead of just being bitter and not talking about it, but talking shit every time they're out at First Friday about being mad about this place. Or, well, have you talked to them about how much that upset you? More often than not, they're going to be down to have those conversations. In my experience, I'm learning that there's so many big corporations, organizations in this city who could, like, say Speedo's coming to town for the Olympics. Let's hire a local artist instead of bringing one from LA.
Yes.
You know, well, why don't we ask St. Avenue to design the Speedo wear? Why aren't we doing stuff like that? Yep. You know,
that's the outside the box thinking that a lot of people don't realize we can tap into, because I think a lot of creatives work is tied up into how do we get free from the constraints of capitalism or whatever it might be, just institutional thinking, so I can put my voice where I want it to be. And I think something that's not modeled very often is how, and what I like what Gang Gang does, is how do we worm our way into these institutions and change it from there? Yes. Because those opportunities are available. It's just, have we asked? Have we sat down and tried to have that conversation? A lot of people don't know how to get in there, and that's where the era comes in and bridges that gap. That's where that bridge is for.
Right. We need more Gang Gang. We need more of me. Yes. We need more of that. And the resources then, when I can help you with the contract, let me pass you on to litigation that I trust in that knows the art world. Let's have those resources already set up for people so that they don't feel like they're backed into the corner. Because also, people are scared to say no in this city because they're scared, or not even just say no, they're scared to ask to counteroffer because they're worried they'll just say no and pass it to another person.
Right.
And I get it. It's a valid fear. It happens all the time. But the more that we hold spaces accountable like that, and the more that people have these asks, it's going to become normal, and the shape-shifting will change.
Exactly.
It's already happening. It's all pivotal change.
And the best, and the thing about that is, too, it's like, I think a lot of that fear is that, oh, well, I'm just part of everyone else who's asking or not asking this. And it's like, I don't want my voice to be generalized. I don't want my art to be generalized. And I think when something that's really been pivotal change for myself is realizing, okay, my voice is powerful in itself and also adds to this fabric of everyone else's voices. And when we realize, okay, we are a specific part of this wider tapestry, it's like, oh, that's where the coalition is. That's where the change can come from, because we're all moving together. Even though we're in our own lanes, like, we can cross over, we can change, we can do these different things. And if we can work together in that way, like, that's where some wild, crazy, incredible stuff happens.
Impact, for sure.
Yes, the impact.
How do you feel? Now I'm asking you a question. how do you feel we can keep that consistency for indie to be on the map rather than just a trend in a moment? Because people talk about it's experiencing this renaissance again. I have thoughts around that, but how do you feel it's for it to remain a consistent place and platform to be like a city? I mean, it's not going to be LA or New York, but it has its own beautiful details that can make indie larger or on a scene for longer than just this trending moment.
So I think it starts with conversations like this. Yeah. And I think the biggest thing, so something I've been talking about, particularly with hip hop artists that have come on the show and with artists or creatives in particular, has been we are so diverse in our offerings, but we don't ever come together in the one space. We don't have like one space where we can all work out of. And so when we do that, people come and they say, oh, that is this individual from Indiana. They don't go, oh, that's Indianapolis art. Mm. That's Indianapolis hip hop. Mm-hmm. And because we all want to be the person, the face of it, we trip over each other's feet trying to be that person. If we can realize we can all stay true to ourselves and come together to create this one cohesive, expansive thing, whatever it is. I don't know the name of the brand. I don't know the name of the umbrella. Like, we can really move forward and become Indianapolis that is sustainable, that's long-term, that turns it from being like oh, that's just the flyover city, to being like, oh, that's the place I want to go mm-hmm. to have my show, to showcase my art, to do a concert, whatever that might be.
Right.
And I think that we just have always not, we've always been moving into our silos. Then we'll go to New York or we'll go to LA and do stuff out there. Then we'll come back and be like, oh, that dude did something really cool. But it's always on that one person mm-hmm. instead of really finding collaboration.
And collective.
And yeah. Like, that's why I like what Gang Gang's doing. I think they really move in that spirit
right.
of connection, collaboration, collective. And I think we have to push that idea out as far as we can within this city to become sustainable. We can't just ride the momentums of a single event like an all-star game or right. even Treese. I love what Treese does for the hip-hop community. But we have to. There's more that we can do to foster this collective idea. And it doesn't just have to be the same people every time. Yeah. There are so many people out here doing it. So I think that to me, from based on the conversations we've been having, is how we transcend the moment and build something that has staying power. And we can continue to thrive and grow and become truly this hub.
I love that answer.
We are a hub. Like Casey just talked about it on her episode about being a hub for small business.
Yeah.
Truly. Like we are that, but a lot of people don't know where the door is to find the resources, mm-hmm. you know, and that's
or
where
who
somebody
even
like
start the conversation
comes.
With.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And the more that we start to have those conversations, the more that people realize we can have the conversation. Like we can move towards that collective idea. And again, it's not about generalizing or sterilizing yourself to be like, okay, I'm the same as this person now or putting out the same thing. Do your own thing.
Right.
And understand that it feeds into the larger fabric of Indianapolis.
Absolutely.
And that's what makes Indianapolis so dope mm-hmm. is because there is so much diverse everything here. And we can all still operate under that same umbrella of Indy.
I love that answer. I'm right there with you. It's exciting, man. I think there's so much pivotal change happening.
Yeah, I think there is. And it's just, and we're really starting to see it. And again, it's just like, we have to continue to push that forward and not lose momentum. It's not like there's not going to be ups and downs. You know, there's always going to be failures that happen.
Right.
But we can still grow from that. Take two steps forward and only one step back.
Hmm.
Like that one step back is always going to happen. But if we can take two forward, that's always moving forward. That's always progress.
I love it.
I appreciate you coming on here and dropping so much knowledge. I feel like this could be a 4-hour conversation because I think there's a lot more that we need to unpack here. But I don't want to take up all of your time. So I want to ask what you have coming up next, coming up now, some projects that you're working on, some people that you're working with that you really want to highlight.
Yeah. Artists I'm working with right now, a few that I'd love to highlight would be Fred Miller, MF Fred. He's just a bright light and beautiful energy, and he's doing a lot for the city, and he's super rooted in community and making sure others have these platforms as well. He's a lot of what we've talked about today.
Yeah.
He's so passionate about St. Avenue, help represent them, working on some things that can't really discuss, but a lot of new works in the projects, like a lot of stuff coming out. So he's, I love so many of the brands in Indianapolis. I love what he's doing because he's so, and not to say everyone isn't intentional, but he's so intentional with his storytelling
mm-hmm.
and his design, and he has so much purpose. Seeing him through this relationship of managing and representing him, seeing how he works with the people who embroider, it's American made. He's got his teams, he's got these people behind him, and he's so, his relationships and how he talks with people, I just respect him. I respect the work he's doing. I see him going places. I hope that I can be a deep part of helping get him in front of other networks. That's an exciting thing. I'm co-hosting a mixer in July 5th at the Phoenix Theater. It'll be in partnership with Underground Sound, and their gallery is called the Michael O'Brien Gallery.
Okay.
Also a really cool gallery here in Indy. 100% of the commissions go back to the artist.
Dope.
Very cool. I'm working with them in partnership to do some solo shows for artists like Alec Ganesha, who I represent. His show will be in May. Just some getting things lined up for next year as well. Mental health is a big thing that I'm passionate about. So trying to form some partnerships for Mental Health Awareness Month around some of these artist mantras, maybe doing something with that. Another, got a lot happening actually. Rev's coming up. Artists are booking for Rev. Yeah, we're still wrapping up All-Star things too. So there's, yeah, that still hasn't
stuff's
ended.
Stuff's going on.
Yeah, lots is happening. It's been exciting to be behind the scenes for these creatives and just help them be supported through their process and take away a lot of the headache of email. Like, I'll create your emails. I'll do all of that. That's what I'm doing. Big, you know, it's huge.
That's a nice job to have from someone. That's a manager right there.
Yeah, it takes a lot of headache. And I keep it real. Like, I'm not one to bullshit. Yeah. So I'll tell you if I don't think it serves you. You don't have to listen to me. But as a manager, I wouldn't be doing you the right type of service.
You're
if
not
I was
a yes
like,
person.
Yeah. Yeah. If this was like, nah, man, I think you should probably pass on that. Like, we're not. And I said the other day to Theo, this artist I work with, I said, man, I want someone, because I am an artist, but not in the sense that I feel like it's like incredible work for the world. It's more just like therapy work when I work with clay and things. And I was like, I want someone to create a piece of art, a comic strip or something that's like, it's just a tombstone or some guy's dead. And it's like, what did he die of? Exposure. Because it's just like, exposure doesn't get you where. I'm so sick of people asking for free opportunities from people everywhere in the city, you know?
Yes, 100%.
It's just like, it's disrespectful to their process. And like, if it doesn't benefit them in other realms, if they can't see the aspect of doing something for free and it's more just to benefit that person and the pipe that they're trying to build or platform, it's just exposure. Like, exposure doesn't often get you anywhere. No. So I don't know, helping people just figure out the right opportunities and based on their lived experiences, what works for them and not forcing any agenda or opportunity I think would be right. I'd like to always have those conversations before I'm like, do you want me to move on this? You know?
100%. I will never ask you to do anything for free for me. Ask Mike. He knows it. But I do not believe in free labor for anything. You should get paid your worth for doing the work.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you saying that.
That's something actually with stuff I have coming up is someone just came to me and asked me to help them with a pretty big event in Indy and wanted me to give them artists that I'm working with and things. And I asked them what they can pay them and they had no clue. And it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
I was just like, get back to me if
figure
you know a
budget
or I can tell you what their estimated range is. Or not, but I'm not going to even introduce an artist I'm working with to an opportunity if there's not a bag for them.
100%. I love that, and that's one of the reasons I want to work with you. We'll talk about that off air.
Cheers.
But I appreciate you dropping so much knowledge and talking about all these things that you have coming up. If people want to tap in with you, with the era, and follow you, find you, maybe figure out how they can work together with you, where do they do that at?
Yep, so my website is wheretheera.com. My social is We're the Era. Also LN Indy. I prefer business contact submissions to go through the website, but I'll take a DM, you know, we'll talk. We can get the conversation started and go from there.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, I know you said you like doing the behind the scenes work, but I'm glad that we got you in front of the camera for this. Incredible, incredible conversation. Ella, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited for the work you're doing and these conversations you're having with people. Like, I can't wait to see what this turns into for you. And also, you're like an integral part of this conversation in Indy as well. So I hope you are proud of yourself. I'm proud of you. Like,
thank
it's exciting.
That.
It's dope to meet you. I'm excited to see how this evolves. But yeah, man, just keep this up. It's like you have a really good thing going on. And again, as you're consistent, it will become the little baby you're trying to build.
Yeah, the little baby I'm trying to build, the brother of the baby that I'm currently trying to raise. Thank you for saying that. That
for
means
sure.
a lot. And I am excited too. I'm feeling pride right now just having heard that. So thank you.
I'm thinking of like a million other artists and talent in the city that I'm like, you need to talk to. You need to have conversation with. So
all right. Well, we'll
make it happen. I'll just give you the list that I brought here.
All right. Perfect. We'll make it happen. Folks, for everybody out there listening, watching, you can find links to everything that we talked about in the show notes at Conversation Pod Piece on IG if you want to follow along with us there. Conversation Piece Pod for all of your archive needs. 2023 archives coming very soon. I keep saying that. Speaking of St. Avenue, hopefully we got some merch coming. I won't say that that is where it's coming from, but hey-o, let's figure that out. Other than that, episodes of this show drop every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube. We have some incredible conversations coming up. Again, 2024, the year of the nap. And until then, I have been the titular Patrick. This has been Conversation Piece. See y'all soon.